Now, I want to speak to a lady who's available for a conversation with us. Her name is Elaine Crory, and she is from Reclaim the Night. Elaine, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Elaine, it may be just be an absolutely appropriate time to remind everyone who's listening about the initiative and how Reclaim the Night came to be and what is it?
Okay, so Reclaim the Night, this is our fifth annual one of the most recent run of them. They were originally founded back in the 1980s in cities sort of across most of the UK, and then it spread elsewhere. The idea behind Reclaim Tonight is it's part of the 16 Days of Action Against Gender-Based Violence that the UN run every year, starting from Sunday this year. And it's just to draw attention to the ways in which women are subject to violence in various forms. And the one we organise in Belfast is about those kinds of issues, and also other people who are disproportionately subject to violence in public, like LGBT people, people of colour, that kind of thing. And so the event is organised to make a statement that we think it needs to stop, and also a solidarity with other people who suffer at the same.
Do you run the risk of painting a picture that people are very unsafe if we're out and about, or not necessarily out and about, we could be in a crowd and still be unsafe considering what you're talking about? Are you possibly exaggerating the risks?
I really don't think so. I think people notice already. They notice because they themselves have been subject to that kind of abuse or harassment. Statistics show that in this part of the world, and it's worse in some others and it's better in some others, but in this part of the world, by the time women are at the end of their teens and I suppose becoming women as opposed to girls, by that time 90%+ of people have been subject to street harassment or like public groping or following or something like that. So it's not like we're referring to something that most people don't know about. People know about this, and especially the categories of people who are more subject to it. So I think what we're doing is, rather than scaremongering or anything like that, is we're providing such solidarity with people who've gone through that, and we're saying it's not just a price you have to pay for being in public as a woman or as a, you know, an LGBT person, for example.
Now, you mentioned groping, and obviously if someone does that, they should end up in court, and the heaviest penalty should be imposed upon them to discourage anyone else who thinks they can touch a person from doing it, to discourage even the thought from a person's mind, and to ensure that that form of assault never happens. But you mentioned about being followed or street harassment. Where does street harassment begin? What's the most, and I don't like to use the term mild, but on a scale, where does street harassment begin? Give me an example of the scale's beginning.
Okay, so I suppose on the quote unquote milder end of the scale, it would involve things like shouting at a person on the street or wolf whistling, that kind of thing. Now, to be honest with you, most people have experienced a lot worse than that. So it's an exaggeration. Sometimes when we speak about street harassment, people say, oh, it's only wolf whistling, it's only a compliment. It's usually intimidatory by nature. Oftentimes, the person who can do this does it from the vantage point of a car, for example, or from being in a crowd when you're on your own. And it's not designed to strike up a conversation. Nobody has ever turned to somebody who's wolf whistled at them or who shouted something about them being attractive from a car and said, that's the man for me, I want to marry him. That's not how it goes. It's usually designed to point out what she looks like, to make her feel self-conscious about her body, or to as some sort of bragging thing to another group of men. And it's not okay whether or not it's directly dangerous, because what it does is it feeds into this narrative that says, women, watch what you wear, watch where you go, you know, you're subject to comment from us if you walk down the street.
But is it really as bad as you're painting it? I'm just imagining if I'm female and I'm walking along the road and three or four guys go past in a car and shout, wow, and the car drives on, does a woman not actually have a sense of feeling, I must be looking fabulous today?
Really not. I think it's easy to imagine that when you aren't experiencing it. And I think also it's worth remembering that the average age when people first experience this is the age of 13. And people have reported as young as 8 years old. And for that reason, it's very intimidatory, and it's very creepy, for want of a better word, to be shouting at a girl, at a child, an adult man shouting at a child. It's definitely not seen by most people.
Of course, and again, but again, you're using an extreme example. A middle-aged guy shouting at a 13-year-old girl. That's despicable. I'm talking about a 20-year-old bloke, or four or five 20-year-old blokes shouting at a 19-year-old girl who's going along the street. Something like, as I've just said, wow! And, you know, does she always feel intimidated by that?
Well, she might not, but it's not how, as it happens to one individual that we're organising around. The example I use is not even remotely extreme. Having talked about this in various formats for a long time, I don't know any women who were past the age of about 14, 15, at the extreme, at the older end of the scale, before this sort of stuff started to happen. And after, a lifetime of this, you don't start to distinguish between, it's okay, the last 15 guys really wanted to make me feel self-conscious or intimidated or scared, but this guy is actually just giving me a compliment. That's not how it works. Even if an individual likes to hear compliments about their appearance, they don't necessarily like to hear it from a stranger yelled at them as they go to work or, you know, go to the shops or go with their child or something like that. It's just not how human psychology works. And while individuals might find individual comments just fine, it's part of a broader phenomenon. And, within that phenomenon is really intimidatory behaviour where a person is abused for not responding, or I've heard from a lot of women that they often find themselves smiling in response to a person who's, shouting or saying something really crude or, explicit to them, that they find themselves smiling back because they're scared of what will happen if they don't react. That resonates with me. I've done that, and I know nearly every woman who has.
Sure, no,
so it's a much bigger problem than...
I get what you're saying, and I know that there's a little delay on the line, but I get absolutely what you're saying, and you're describing people playing along because they actually feel a little fearful, and that no one should ever make another person of any gender feel as if they are afraid or uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are guys who never intended to be for that to be the outcome, but now they know that there's the possibility of that. Maybe they'll stop shouting or whistling. And as you move on up the scale, obviously I think everyone's going to agree with you that any form of interaction with someone that hasn't welcomed it or invited it or encouraged it is to be described as reprehensible. What about when we spin the coin the other way around, where it's the woman who's leading the charge, who's being rude, who's being I suppose forward, for want of a better term?
I would go further than forward in these instances. I think people are usually, when they say things like this, they're usually referring to something like a raucous hen night or something like that, as opposed to that it's quite normal for a man to nip down to the shop for a pint of milk and be, you know, yelled at by a woman or a group of women, or coming home from school to be yelled at by a woman or a group of women. And look, I'm sure that happens, and that's wrong too.
Yeah, so it's equally wrong. It's equally wrong for women out on the social scene who maybe have a few drinks. I'm talking about women who maybe are in their 20s, who are very confident and who are shouting the odds to blokes, who are being rude out of the back of taxis, who are hanging around nightclubs and who are saying things that they wouldn't say in front of their granny, for want of a better term. You're equally as critical of those women.
As anybody who harasses anybody in public, the public space should be open and free. And here's the other thing. That does happen. It certainly does. But I've never heard advice from police or authorities with things like, don't go out on your own. Make sure you text your friends when you get home. Carry your keys in between your fingers. Be aware of what's around you. Don't listen to music on your headphones if you're on your own, because you can't hear somebody coming up behind you. Cross the road if somebody's walking behind you quite quickly. Those kinds of advice are always aimed at women, because this is the kind of stuff that we've all adjusted in our lives to being very careful where we go and when we go. And, you know, you get, there's a separate sort of category of advice for female joggers or sports people. You get the same thing around LGBT clubs and stuff like that. You know, you have to be extra careful because you are in this special category. And that shouldn't be the way that we approach it. I think we should approach it by directing this awareness at people who are prone to harass. Very often men, I suppose not exclusively, but to say to them, it's not okay to harass another person, whether quote-unquote mild or touching or something more serious in public. And on the point of touching, and you were saying you think most people understand it, it's reprehensible, I'm not sure that that's true, because there is, especially in crowded places, buses, public transport, places like gigs and concerts, and anywhere you, where you might be standing in close proximity to strangers, there's a degree to which women are very often touched or brushed up against in an intimidatory way. And sometimes other people around see that, and sometimes, usually, they do nothing. So another thing we want to encourage is what we call bystander intervention, which is whereby if you're out in a public place and you see somebody, whether it's a stranger or whether it's somebody you know even worse, doing something like this, you tell them to stop. You don't wait for the person who is, in this case, the victim, to speak up for themselves because they might be terrified. You turn to your friends and use power of social pressure to say, it's not okay to do that. Leave her alone. Or, you know, you call for help. You go to a bouncer, security, bar staff, something like that, if you're in a large public place, transport police, anything that's around that might help you deal with the situation. I think one of the biggest problems we have as a society is saying, well, you know, it doesn't really happen to me, so it's not really so much of a problem anymore. And, you know, I'm in my late 30s now. It doesn't happen to me the way it used to when I was a younger woman, but it's still a problem. And I look at my children and I think, I don't want them to have to go through that. So even though it's no longer directly happening to me, just like it doesn't directly happen to let's say, middle-aged men, I think there's still a responsibility on us to try and make society more understanding of how much of a problem this is. So instead of saying things like, is it really that big a deal if somebody, you know, shouts a compliment on the street, if you truly want to compliment somebody, approach them, engage in a conversation with them. If they seem keen to engage in a conversation, then you can compliment them. But complimenting strangers or, you know, or running down the street after a stranger or yelling at a stranger, whether or not you think it's a compliment, it's not. It's intimidation.
And what about this touching that you talk about, for example, at a pop concert whereby everyone's cheek by jowl squeezed into a big venue? You mentioned the term brushing against. Are you conscious of people doing it on purpose, or are you conscious that people in a really crowded environment might accidentally brush against someone?
I think most people understand the difference, and I mean very deliberate and purposeful touching. I know a lot of people who have told me, and I was at a festival that runs every May called Women's Work, Women in the Music Industry, and a lot of these women, by virtue of being in the music industry, spend a lot of time at concerts, and every single one of them had multiple stories of somebody using the opportunity of a crowd to grab the breasts or grab the bum or something because it could be passed off as an accident, or because there's so many other people around that they could be gone in the crowd in a second. It does happen. It absolutely happens. It's happened to me. It happens to everybody. And also, and that's obviously sexual harassment of some sort. There's also violent harassment. And women have been attacked for not responding in the right way to a quote-unquote advance from a stranger in a public place.
I noticed as well...
And LGBT people...
Yes, because there are many groups and organisations, including the LGBT community, who support what you're doing, the National Union of Students, the Union of Students in Ireland, a Gender Jam as well. Also, the Sex Workers Alliance of Ireland, and people who work as sex workers prefer to be called sex workers as opposed to the older term of prostitutes or working in prostitution. They are known as sex workers. And there's an important message here, isn't there, for people who would employ a sex worker. You cannot overstep the mark just because someone works in the sex industry.
Yes, absolutely. They're doing a job of work. Not my line of work, but it's a job of work. And while they're not doing that work and not being paid for it, they are not objects to be used. They're human beings. And we're saying that they're especially vulnerable with the law at the moment, which criminalises purchase of sex work, which means that sex workers can't work indoors in a safe place that they can advertise. They have to very often be on the street, which makes them especially vulnerable. In the same way as women and LGBT people are vulnerable in the street by their visibility, it's that plus worse because of the sort of disdain that a large parts of society have for sex workers. And we also want to challenge that as part of a bigger project that says sex workers work. These people are as deserving of respect and peace and so on as I am and you are.
Yeah, so you're fully supportive of people working in the sex industry, whereas people might have thought that you would have been discouraging women to work in it.
Well, it's for me to decide what a person does for their career. And if that's what they've chosen to do, then that's, they deserve the same workers' rights as a person who has chosen to be a baker or a chef or a dentist.
Where is the Reclaim the Night event? It's happening tomorrow, I believe. Is it, Elaine?
That's right. It's happening tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at Boy Park, although I believe the formal name for Boy Park is Kipsonville Gardens, but it's that square next to the Art College. Now, if you happen to go down to the march tomorrow night, and we encourage people to go, you'll notice that there's a fun fair directly in front facing onto York Street. It's behind that. There's a cordoned area behind that that we'll be in there. And we'll gather there to hear speeches at 7. And then we head off. It's quite a short march and it's due to be a clear, dry night. So it won't take too long. And then we can all go indoors and get warm. And we basically march round to the Albert Clock. And that's it. There's no return leg or anything like that.
Okay. Elaine, if people want to take part, they can support that tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Thanks for coming on. Thank you.